Chapter 52. It took all of Caris's courage to open the door to her own room. There was no escape from this. If Mauricio weren't waiting in the room now, she'd be there later, at some time when Caris wasn't ready. In fact, the more she'd thought about it, the more certain she'd become that Mauricio knew that she knew. Of course, a new handler in charge of gathering information would immediately ask who the old handler had been. Thus, in surrendering Tia to be handled by Caris, Mauricio had knowingly surrendered herself. Caris opened the door. Mauricio was seated at her desk off to the side of the room, her quill scratching quietly. She looked up and put the quill in its stand. She was perfectly calm. A perfect lady, despite her clipped ears. Irritatingly beautiful. A winter storm was raging outside, sheets of rain cascading past the windows, thunder rattling the tower. Walking straight toward her desk, Caris felt like a young blackguard coming to report to her watch captain, rather than as the lady of the household coming to confront a slave. A slave. But Caris's knees felt weak.
"The White told me long ago," Mauricio said. "She who controls the information controls everything."
Caris was curiously numb. She walked over to Mauricio's desk, pulled a chair over and sat across from her. Mauricio studied her quietly, an expression that Caris couldn't quite read, fluttering around the edges of her face like a moth trying to escape from a tent.
"My father had a different take. She who controls the prism controls everything," Caris said.
They stared at each other for a long time, and for the very first time, Caris looked at Mauricio as a woman. For the first time, she ignored the clipped ears and looked at her eyes. How had she missed it? She'd known Mauricio was competent, of course. Blackguards liked working with competent slaves who made sure there were no distractions from the work at hand. Mauricio directed her small army of subordinate slaves perfectly, making sure everything here was done precisely right, precisely on time. Such oversight was more than enough work for any one woman, much less any one slave. Much less any one slave? An odd thought. Slaves came from every social stratum in every land. One poor decision, or too many bad debts and no family willing to pay for your foolishness, or bandits or pirates and no friends willing to pay your ransom. Whether you were at fault or utterly innocent, it could be one tiny step away. When she was a girl, Caris had played with Tyra Appleton. When they were young enough that complementary personalities had mattered more than differing stations. But in the False Prism's War, the Appleton's lord had sided with Dazen Guile. The Appleton estate had been on the border of Blood Forest and Atash, directly in the path of Gavin's army. Lady Appleton had known they would be overrun if she answered her lord's call to arms. She did it anyway, loyalty overcoming sense, mistaking a question of smart and stupid for one of right and wrong. Caris still wasn't sure whether the action was more praiseworthy or blameworthy. Within a week, Lady Appleton's estates were taken, her 6 sons killed, her 4 daughters clipped and sold. Mauricio stared at Caris, and Caris studied her back, each silent, broken mirrors to each other, Mauricio's hair its natural red, Caris's hair naturally red, now dyed black. Where was Tyra now? Where were her sisters? Even knowing how easy it was to fall into slavery, Caris had somehow kept slaves at arm's length, made them other. It made them more bearable. One misstep and she could have sat in Mauricio's place, serving some lord. Come to think of it, if her own loathsome father hadn't been careful to keep the White Oaks aligned with Gavin and Andros Guile. No, Orholam, please, no. She'd never thought of it this way. His maneuvering had been all cowardice. It hadn't been. She remembered her father's face during the feast, while the real Gavin Guile had mocked him and made bawdy jokes about bedding his daughter in exotic ways. Father had looked stricken. He'd looked pathetically weak. But what could he do? With Dazen's burning of their estate on Big Jasper, the White Oaks had lost the bulk of their fortune and all their best people. They'd also had enormous debts to nobles who'd sided with Dazen, debts they could never pay, debts they might not be required to pay if Gavin won the war. From her father's perspective, the White Oaks' only hope was in binding themselves to the real Gavin Guile and his father Andros. What if father had thought, while the young drunken Caris was being led away to be forced, what if he thought, better she be forced once and be married to the prism than she be made a slave and raped by whoever wanted to forever? Weak, disgusting, wrong, but not selfish, not loveless. And he'd blown out his brains when Caris hated him for it. She hadn't shed one bitter tear for her father since she'd refused the abortifacient. She felt suddenly very, very sick, but she tried to regain focus. No weakness here, not in front of this woman. Maricia opened a cabinet, hesitated, choosing, and pulled out a decanter full of amber liquid. She produced a single ornate crystal glass and filled it with a more than generous double pour. She set the glass exactly in the middle of the small table. It was an homage to an old blood forest custom, born of a hospitality that defied poverty. A family might be able to afford only one nice goblet, but that one would be shared between host and guest. Whether families retained the tradition as they grew in wealth, or quickly discarded the tradition to give each person her own glass, said a lot about how that family felt about their origins. Maricia took the glass, inclined it to Caris, and drank. Cromeria tradition, though, dictated that slaves and masters or mistresses not drink together. If two social unequals dined or drank together, at least the lesser was supposed to defer to the greater. Maricia's eyes danced, as if daring Caris. Am I your host who is sharing her own liquor with you? Or a slave? Who am I to you? She asked. To hell with it. In this, Maricia was Caris's superior. She'd been running a spy network. For how long? Besides, it had always been wine or brandy shared in Blood Forest, never whiskey. Maybe it was time for new traditions. Caris took the glass and took a gulp. It set her on fire, and pain had never felt so good. She counted it a victory that she didn't cough. As the fire spread through her gut, she held up the glass, as if admiring the colour. It was a thing aficionados seemed to do. Barrenmore? Whiskies were a niche taste, made even more so by the vast distances the barrels had to travel from the distilleries at the edge of Blood Forest in the highlands above Greenhaven, and their subsequent cost. Caris hadn't been able to afford the stuff on her blackguard wages. She'd guessed Barrenmore only because it was one of the two best. Crag Tooth, Maricia said, examining it in turn and taking another sip. Caris said. The other one. Damn it. Easy miss. This is the 16. After it's matured 16 years, it mellows to be easier drinking, like Barrenmore. I prefer it because it still retains its fiery character and complexity, while time takes off the rough edges and impetuosity. Caris looked at Maricia sharply. 16 years? Rough edges and impetuosity? The woman's eyes danced again. Damn her, Caris was not going to like this woman. And how does it do as it ages further? Craig Tooth hasn't been a player for that long, but I'm confident that in the fullness of time it will bring Callas and Satrapas to their knees. They drank together, trading sips, each thinking private thoughts. They watched the storm smash all its rage on the Cromeria, lightning striking the tops of the towers themselves, power channeled down into the earth itself, diffused, harmless. Rain sheeting the windows so thickly it was impossible to see to any distance. Wind hammering the tower so hard it swayed, but was unbroken. And whether it was the warmth of the whiskey or the fire, or, oddly, the company, Caris found herself enjoying the storm. The storm was subsiding by the time they finished their second whiskey, a little light fighting through the clouds just at the horizon. Caris set the glass down on the table, stood, and walked to the door without a word. She opened it and, looking back, saw woman and storm and light. The eye can see all at once, but only focus on one at a time. The clouds were still dark, angry. She said, "You know, sharing a glass with you is one thing, but there's no way I'm sharing my husband with a..." But the words didn't make it to completed thought, much less out of her mouth. There was a sudden stiffness in Maricia's spine, a grief in her eyes at all that was denied her. As Caris had been a warrior in the Cromeria's open battles,
So had Mauricio been one in its secret battles, and perhaps neither was content any more to fight alone.
Caris started over.
"Sharing a glass with you is the best thing I've done in months,"